So what is it, madame?
Dr. Rendell.
What about Dr. Rendell?
He's the murderer.
You are sure of that?
Certainly. My intuition never lets me down. He's just the type. Hearty and genial, with his smile always firmly in place.
And what would you say was his motive?
Unprofessional conduct. And Mrs. McGinty got to know about it. Oh, whatever the reason was, you can be sure it was him.
Yesterday afternoon, somebody tried to push me onto the railway line at Kilchester Station.
What? You mean somebody tried to kill you?
I have no doubt that was the general idea.
Well, that settles it. Dr. Rendell was out on a case. I know he was.
And Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter were both in Kilchester at that time and came home separately. Mrs. Rendell says she was at home listening to the radio, but who knows?
Well, I think I can vouch for our lot. Robin, his mother, and I were playing poker patience.
And Mrs. Summer Hayes was cooking my supper. Oh, it was execrable. But then, so is everything at Long Meadows. The draughts, the upset stomachs of the cats, the smell of the pigs, the tepid water in the bathroom, and the coffee. Oh. Words cannot describe the fluid they serve as coffee. It is an affront to the stomach.
But she seems an awfully nice woman.
Oh, yes, she is utterly charming. That's what makes it so difficult.
She's coming. Oh.
I think I'm a tiny bit tiddly. Oh, such a lot of lovely gin. I do like parties, and this one is entirely due to you two. We don't often have celebrities in Broadhinny. I do wish I could write books like you, Mrs. Oliver. The trouble with me is that I can't do anything properly.
You are a good wife and mother, madame.
Am I? I love them all terribly, but is that enough?
If you will not think me presumptuous, madame, a wife who truly loves her husband should take care of his stomach. It is important, the stomach.
Really? I never think it matters much what one eats,
or
what one wears, or what one does with one's hair.
Really?
I don't think anything matters except happiness. I read a really stupid letter in the paper the other day. Some woman wanted to know which it was best to do. To let your child be adopted by someone who could give it every advantage, a good education, clothes, holidays, that sort of thing. Or to let the child stay in the family no matter how badly off they were.
And what did you think?
Give a child a real home and lots of love and plenty to eat. That's all that matters. I ought to know. I was an adopted child. I had every advantage, like that woman says, and I was utterly miserable. It's always hurt. Always. To know that you weren't really wanted and that your mother could let you go.
Perhaps it was a sacrifice for your good, madame.
I don't think that's ever true. I wouldn't give up my children, not for all the so-called advantages in the world.
Oh, so that's where you've got to. You're looking terribly serious. May one ask what you're talking about?
Adoption. I don't like being adopted, do you?
Well, it's much better than being an orphan, don't you think, darling? I hate to tear Ariadne away, but we really ought to be going. The Madre was so looking forward to coming to the party, but her leg was playing her up particularly badly this evening, so she had to stay at home. I thought we might take a few friends back for a nightcap, just so she doesn't feel she's missed out too much.
Oh, what a lovely idea. Come on, Robin.
And so we all made our way up the hill to La Burnham's, where another bottle of gin was opened, and the company became even more animated.
It really is so kind of you all. Since I couldn't come to the party, Robin has brought the party back to me. Now tell me all about it. Will the Weatherby, sir?
No, Mrs. Weatherby didn't feel well enough, and that dim Henderson girl wouldn't come without her.
She really is rather peculiar, isn't she?
It's almost pathological, isn't it?
I blame that mother of hers. Some mothers almost seem to eat their young, don't they?
Do I devour you, Robin?
Madre, of course you don't.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean...
Everyone seemed rather embarrassed by the turn the conversation had taken, and Mrs. Rendell decided to change the subject by cross-questioning me about my investigation, and soon everybody began to join in.
Tell us all what you've been finding out, Monsieur Poirot. And if that dreary lodger of hers didn't kill her, who did?
He used to mutter to himself all the time, wandering about in the lanes. He really did look very strange.
You must have some reason to think he didn't kill her, Mr. Poirot. Did the police miss out on something?
Was it a tramp or somebody who did it? Or was it a person living in Broadhay?
Don't embarrass the poor man. He probably suspects one of us.
Well, in that case, let's find out what we're all doing on the night of the murder. When was it exactly?
November the 22nd.
Gracious, I don't know.
Nobody could know after all this time.
Well, I know, because I was doing a broadcast that night. I drove over to Coalport to give a talk on John Galsworthy, and I remember I discussed the role of the charwoman in the silver box. And the next day, I heard about Mrs. McGinty, and I wondered if the charwoman in the play had been like her.
Of course I remember now. Your mother said she would be all alone because it was Janet's night off. And I came over here after dinner to keep her company. Only, unfortunately, I couldn't make her hear.
Yes, I'd gone to bed early with a frightful headache and locked all the doors. And I wouldn't have heard you because my bedroom faces the back garden.
And the following morning, I kept wondering why Mrs. McGinty was so late. It wasn't like her at all. Oh, horrible, really, isn't it?
But you haven't told us how your investigation is going, Mr. Poirot.
If you can't tell us who did it, you might at least give us a clue.
Oh, yes, that's it. Give us a clue.
You want a clue? Then take a look at these.
What a ghastly looking lot.
Just look at that hat.
And those frightful glasses.
Is one of these photographs supposed to be the murderer, Monsieur Poirot?
Who on earth are they?
You do not recognize any of them? You do not remember ever seeing any of these faces before?
Yes, I think I do.
Which of them, Mrs. Upward?
That one.
The ghastly child with the pebble glasses.
And you have seen that photograph before? Where?
I can't remember exactly where, but I'm sure I've seen a face just like that quite recently.
The photograph was that of Lily Gamble. And after that, the party broke up and everyone set off back home. I began to follow them down the drive, but as I reached the gate, something made me turn back. Should I have thrown those photographs on the table? Had the drink gone to my head as it had to everyone else's?
But you must remember, darling, it's a play, not a book, and we've got to have some glamour.
From an open window, I could hear the voice of Robin Upward with occasional protest from Mrs. Oliver. I went back into the house. Mrs. Upward was sitting alone before the fire with a rather grim look on her face.
Oh, Monsieur Poirot, you quite startled me.
I am sorry, madame. Did you think it was someone else?
Did you leave something behind?
What I feared I had left, madame, was danger.
Danger?
Danger perhaps to you, because you recognized one of those photographs.
I wouldn't say recognized. All these old pictures look exactly alike.
Now, listen to me, madame. I believe that Mrs. McGinty also recognized one of those photographs. And Mrs. McGinty is dead.
Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Sticking her neck out, just like I.
If you know anything, anything at all, it would be safer to tell me now.
My dear man, I'm not at all sure that I know anything. Certainly nothing so definite as a fact.
But it's
no, it's no good. You're rushing me, Monsieur Poirot. I'm not that sort of person. I've a mind of my own, and I take time to make it up. When I come to a decision, I will act, but not before I am ready.
You are in many ways a secretive person, Mrs. Upward.
Perhaps, up to a point. Knowledge is power. Power must only be used to the right end. And you'll excuse my saying that you don't perhaps appreciate the patterns of our English country life.
In other words, I am only a damned foreigner.
I shouldn't be so rude as that.
If you do not want to talk to me, there is always Superintendent Spence.
No, Monsieur Poirot, not the police. Not at this stage.
Very well, then. You are determined to play a lone hand. But I have warned you, and do not forget what I have said. Mrs. McGinty looked at those photographs, and I believe she recognized one of them. And she paid for that with her life.
Monsieur Poirot.
Oh, pardon, Mrs. Randall. You quite made me jump.
I hope I'm not disturbing you.
Oh, no. The day is fine, and I am enjoying the delights of spring. The gentle sunshine, the song of the birds.
I suppose that when you're investigating something, you always have to have a pretext.
A pretext, madame?
To explain your being here and asking questions.
It is sometimes expedient.
Why are you really here in Broughtinny, Monsieur Poirot?
But, my dear lady, you know very well. To inquire into the death of Mrs. McGinty.
I know that's what you say, but nobody believes it.
But I assure you it is the simple truth.
So you won't tell me?
There is nothing to tell.
I wanted to ask you about anonymous letters.
Yes, Mrs. Randall?
They're really always lies, aren't they?
Well, they are sometimes lies, madame.
But you wouldn't ever believe what was said in one, would you?
Well, that is a very difficult question.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't ever believe anything of that kind. I know why you're here. I know what you're thinking. And it isn't true, I tell you. It isn't true.
And she walked rapidly away. What did it mean? Did it have something to do with the murder, or was she simply leading me up the garden walk? The sun went in, and the spring day faded. I went back into Long Meadows, preoccupied with a question which Superintendent Spence had not solved and which I had neglected. What had become of the instrument with which Mrs. McGinty had been killed? And then I noticed, on top of the bookcase, a curious object of ornamental brass decorated with coloured stones, with a little bird with turquoise eyes. And instantly I knew that this must be the murder weapon. It was shaped like an adze, with a sharp cutting edge.
What are you doing with the sugar cutter, Monsieur Poirot?
Oh, is that what it is? A sugar cutter?
Sugar cutter, sugar hammer. I don't know what it's actually called. It looks a bit silly with that funny little bird on top, but you could do quite a bit of damage with it. I always tell Johnny that'll be what's coming to him if he misbehaves himself.
And did you bring it back with you from India?
Oh, no, I got it at the B&B at Christmas.
The B&B?
Bring and buy sale at the vicarage. You bring something you don't want and you buy something else. The Weatherby said it came from Baghdad.
It came from the Weatherby's house?
Yes, they've got the most frightful lot of junk. But I must go and see how the pudding is getting on.
I carried the sugar hammer up to my room and packed it up to send to Superintendent Spence. Amid the chaos of Long Meadows, no one would ever miss it. And then I walked over to the Weatherby's house.
Oh, it's you.
May I come in and speak to you?
I suppose so.
You.
We're all over the place today. Our German girl has given notice. Seems she only took the job because there was somebody over here she wanted to marry. She's leaving tomorrow.
It is, alas, not an age of consideration.
My stepfather says it isn't legal. Mm. There's not a thing we can do about it. Do sit down. Let me move these things.
Thank you.
What was it you wanted?
I wish to ask you about a sugar hammer.
A sugar hammer?
An instrument of brass with a little bird on top of it.
Oh, yes, I know.
I understand it came from this house.
Yes. My mother bought it at the bazaar in Baghdad. It was one of the things we took to the bring and buy.
So it was here in this house until Christmas, and then you sent it to the sale at the vicarage?
No, it wasn't the Christmas B&B. It was the one at Harvest Festival.
Oh. And that would have been when, mademoiselle?
The end of September.
You are quite sure of that?
Quite sure, Monsieur Poirot.
Mrs. McGinty had been killed in November. So who was right? Had the sugar hammer been at the Weatherby's at the time of the murder, or at Long Meadows? But what chiefly intrigued me was Deirdre Henderson's total lack of interest. Why had she not asked me why I wanted to know?
You know, Ariadne, I don't feel in the mood to talk about the play today.
Too much gin at the party last night, I expect.
Yes, the drinks were flowing pretty freely.
Perhaps we should think about casting. If we could get Dennis Callery, of course it would be marvellous, but he's tied up on some film. But I've had the most wonderful brainwave about Eric. Cecil Leach. He's playing at the Little Rep in Cullencue tonight. We could drive over there and see him. What do you think?
What a very good idea, yes. I'd love to.
As I walked back down the drive from Hunter's Close, I wondered what mysteries lay hidden in that unhappy house. I remembered Mrs. Weatherby's room, strewn with knick-knacks and mementos. Could that have been where Mrs. McGinty had seen the photograph that had sent her to her death? What I needed was a spy to penetrate those suffocating ivy-clad walls.
Monsieur Poirot, someone called Maud Williams rang while you were out. I wrote the number down on my ration book.
Oh, thank you, madame. You permit that I use your telephone?
Oh, feel free.
Breather and scuttle.
May I speak to Maud Williams, please?
Speaking.
This is Hercule Poirot. I believe you rang me.
Oh, yes. It's about the property you were asking about the other day. Can we do anything in the matter for you?
Do you still wish to help James Bentley?
Yes.
Would you resign your present post?
Oh, yes.
And take on a domestic post immediately with people who are not very sympathetic? It would mean living in.
Oh, yes, I think that might be managed.
You can cook?
Very well, as it happens.
Oh, bon Dieu, what a rarity. I will come to Kilchester at once. I will meet you at the same cafe where we met before.
Thank you very much. I'll put that in hand straight away.
Oh, madame, I regret that I shall not be in to lunch. I have to go into Kilchester.
Oh, thank goodness for that. I'd completely forgotten the pudding and it's boiled dry. Oh, I'm sure it's quite all right, really. Just a little scorched. But I thought I'd better open a bottle of the raspberries I put up last summer, just in case. They've got a bit of mould on top, but they say nowadays that doesn't matter. After all, that's what penicillin is, isn't it?
But it's Janet's night off, Robin. Oh, well, of course I should know. You never remember anything when you're working on a play.
Oh, Madre, I'm so terribly sorry. It went right out of my mind.
It doesn't really matter.
Of course it does. I'll ring them up and tell them we'll go tomorrow night.
You'll do nothing of the sort. I don't want to upset Mrs. Oliver. You go off and enjoy yourselves. I thought of someone I'll ask to keep me company.
Who's that?
That's my secret. And now stop fretting about it all, Robin.
And so the Weatherbys will be expecting you tomorrow. You understand what it is you have to look out for?
Yes, I've got a pretty good idea.
And does anyone know you in Bertini?
I've been over there on business once or twice.
And whom did you see?
A Mrs. Carstairs. She was staying at the place where you are.
Long Meadows. And did you see Mrs. Summerhays or her husband?
I saw her, but she's too scatterbrained to remember me. And I saw James Bentley, of course.
By accident?
No, I'd sent him a postcard telling him I'd be coming that day. Not that there was anywhere we could go. We just talked at the bus stop before I went back to Kilchester.
And you spoke to no one else in Brotini?
Well, only Robin Upwood. I've heard him talk on the wireless. I spotted him coming out of his cottage and asked him for his autograph. He was ever so nice about it, particularly as I'd only got an odd sheet of notepaper.
Good. Now, I would like you to look at these photographs.
Rather on the old-fashioned side, aren't they?
The oldest was taken 30 years ago.
Oh.
Have you seen any of them before?
I've an idea I've seen this one. And that kid looks a bit familiar, too. But I can't remember where I saw them.
All these pictures appeared in the Sandy Comet the weekend before Mrs. McGinty was killed.
And you think they've got something to do with it?
Yes, mademoiselle. Now, here is the article that went with the photographs.
Where are these women now? You think one of them may be living in Broadhinney?
It is possible.
Eva Kane would be quite old by now, in her 60s.
You've heard of the Craig case?
Who hasn't? He was in Madame Tussauds. I don't suppose that murder will ever be forgotten, do you?
Sorry to keep you waiting, Ariadne. But I thought I really had to have another word with the Madre before we left.
And always will?
Oh, yes. She'd just put the telephone down, but the wicked old thing wouldn't tell me who she'd been ringing up. Even so, I bet I know.
Yes, I know too.
So, who do you say it was?
Hercule Poirot.
Yes, that's my guess too. She's going to pump him, but she does like to have her little secret. Well, let's be off. I'm sure you're going to enjoy the play enormously.
I'm sure I shall.
But it's important that you tell me exactly what you think of Cecil Leach and whether he's your idea of Eric. I do want you to be happy about him. So, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. Great fun.
No, I mean, what did you think of Cecil?
But he's nothing like Eric at all. Not even remotely. He's a very good actor, of course.
Well, let's go round and have a word with him.
Oh, do we really have to? I have an absolute horror of bearding actors in their dressing rooms. I never know what to say.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that. You won't be expected to say anything. But I'll tell you what, I'll get Michael to look after you. He's the one playing the doctor. I happen to know he's a great admirer of yours.
We've been trying to get Robin to come over and see the show for absolutely ages, but of course he's completely under that terrible woman's thumb, isn't he? Dancing attendance on her all the time.
Well, I suppose she really...
I've known Robin for years, and he's far too brilliant to be sacrificed on the matriarchal altar. I mean, just look at what she did to poor Alex Roscoff.
I don't think she was
all over him for nearly a year. Couldn't do enough for him. And then she discovered he wasn't a Russian emigre at all.
Oh, really?
Of course, Alex had been telling some pretty tall stories. It was rather naughty of him. But then, when she discovered he was only the son of a little tailor in the East End, she dropped him and turfed him out.
How very unfortunate.
Mind you, I think the poor boy was quite relieved to get away. He said she could be quite frightening sometimes.
What stories are you telling Ariadne, Mother?
Oh, we're just talking about your wonderful madre. It's such a shame she couldn't come over tonight.
It's time we were getting back to her, I think. If you don't mind me dragging you away, Ariadne.
Not at all.
It's been a joy to meet you, Mrs. Oliver. Quite marvellous. And thank you for all those simply delicious murders.
Well, I do hope the evening hasn't tired you too much, Ariadne.
No, not at all. The truth is, I'm not very good with people.
But surely you must be interested in them. What about all the characters in your books?
That's different. When it comes to the real thing, I much prefer trees. I think they're nicer than people. More restful.
Hmm. I do hope the madre hasn't been sitting up for us. It's quite late.
Mm.
You go in while I put the car away. The front door won't be locked.
Just turned all the lights out. Not very welcoming. Oh, where on earth is the switch? Ah. Strange smell, a very expensive scent. Mrs. Upward? She must have fallen asleep. Robin! Robin!
What is it? Is something the matter?
No, don't go in there, Robin. Your mother's dead. I think someone's killed her.
Senseless brutality. Strangled with one of her own silk scarves. Quick and efficient. Especially where the victim is quite unsuspicious.
Which suggests it was someone she knew.
They were having coffee together. Prints had been wiped off the guest's cup, but there were distinct traces of lipstick.
Yes, a woman was indicated.
It obviously ties up with the McGinty murder. She recognises the photograph of Lily Gamble, and she takes advantage of her son and Mrs. Oliver being away at the theatre to ring up the person concerned and ask her to come and see her.
I fear she did not realise that what she was doing might be dangerous. So many people think of murder as a game. It is not a game. I told her so, but she would not listen.
It all ties in, of course. Robin Upward said that when he went to say goodbye to his mother, she had just finished telephoning somebody. But she wouldn't tell him who it was.
Mm.
Come in.
I hope I'm not intruding. But your sergeant said I should see you straight away.
Is it something to do with last night, with Mrs. Upward?
Yes. Is it true she was murdered?
It's true, Miss Henderson. What is it you wanted to say?
I was here.
Here?
Yes.
At what time?
Oh, I don't know exactly. Between 8:30 and 9. She telephoned me, you see.
You spoke to her?
No, the German girl took the message. She said she would be all alone because her son and Mrs. Oliver had gone out, and would I come and have coffee with her?
And you saw her?
No, I didn't. I knocked, but there was no answer. It was quite dark, and there was no light in the sitting room. I called out, but no one replied. I thought our maid must have made a mistake.
So what did you do?
I just went away.
Back home?
I went for a bit of a walk first. It was quite fine.
Well, thank you, Miss Henderson. You were quite right to come and see us.
Thank you, mademoiselle.
Thank you.
No lipstick. Or is that only this morning?
No. She never uses it.
No scent either. Mrs. Oliver said there was a distinct smell of scent, and not the kind Mrs. Upwood used.
I do not think Miss Henderson would use scent.
Looks like the hockey captain of an old-fashioned girls' school.
She's the right age for Lily Gamble.
But she's got a perfectly good mother. Lily Gamble's mother was killed in a drunken brawl.
Have you established the time of Mrs. Upwood's death?
All the police surgeon will say is that she was probably dead by 9:30.
So she may have been dead when Deirdre Henderson arrived.
Probably. What we need to find out is where Mrs. Rendell and Mrs. Carpenter were at the time.
Either of them could afford expensive scent.
Oh, by the way, we're pretty sure the sugar hammer was the weapon used in Mrs. McGinty's murder.
Ah.
There are traces of human blood on it. So, did Mrs. Summerhayes buy it at Christmas or at Harvest Festival?
I do not know whether it matters so very much.
How's that?
At Long Meadows, the doors and windows are always open. Anyone could come in and take something away and put it back later, and neither Major Summerhayes nor his wife would ever notice. They neither of them observed the absence of the sugar hammer.
Well, there's one good thing. They won't hang James Bentley until all this is cleared up. And that gives us what we've been short of. Time.
Yes. And now we know a little more. I think I would like to see James Bentley for myself.
None of it will do any good. What's the use?
Your friends are working very hard on your behalf.
My friends? I have no friends.
You have at least two friends.
And who might they be?
First, there is Superintendent Spence.
He's no friend to me. He's the one who put me in here. Who's the other one supposed to be?
Maud Williams.
Who's she?
She worked in the offices of Breather and Scuttle.
Oh, that Maud Williams. What's it got to do with her?
She is convinced you are innocent.
I don't see what she can know about it.
She knows you. You worked together at the office, did you not? You had meals together.
Yes, once or twice.
Oh, ma foi, is it a crime that I seek to drag from you? To keep the company of a pretty girl? Is it not natural?
Well, you see, I've never had much to do with girls. She wasn't quite what you would call a lady. I couldn't help feeling that Mother would have thought common.
But it is what you think that matters. You found her sympathetic?
She was always very kind.
She met you once in Broadhinney, I understand.
Yes. She said she was going over on business. She sent me a postcard.
But you did meet her?
Yes. I didn't want to be rude.
And you took her to the pictures or a meal?
Nothing of that kind. We just chatted while she was waiting for her bus.
Well, let us talk about something else. Mrs. McGinty took the Sandy Comet. Did you ever read it?
She used to offer it to me sometimes, but I never looked at it. Mother didn't care for that kind of paper.
Did Mrs. McGinty ever speak to you about anything she read in it?
Oh, yes, she did. On the Sunday before she died, she was full of it.
Ah, and what did she say? Now, be careful. This is very important.
It was all about some old murder case. Craig, I think it was. Anyway, she said someone connected with the case was living in Broadhenny.
Did she say who it was?
I think it was that woman whose son writes plays.
Did she mention her by name?
I don't know. It's so long ago.
Now think. What did Mrs. McGinty say?
Well, something like, so pleased with herself and so proud. Not so much to be proud of, if all's known.
And what makes you so sure it was Mrs. Upward of whom she was speaking?
I really don't know. I just formed that impression.
Oh, mon Dieu. It is preposterous to reflect that if you are hanged, it will be because you do not pay proper attention to what is said to you. Did Mrs. McGinty ever speak to you of Mrs. Carpenter? Mrs. Selkirk, as she was then, or Mrs. Randall?
She was always very down on Mrs. Selkirk. I don't know why. Jumped up is what she used to call her.
And the Randalls?
He's the doctor, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember her saying anything particular about them.
What about the Weatherbys?
She said she had no patience with her fusses and fancies. It was an unhappy house, she said.
And did she never say anything particular about Miss Henderson?
Not that I remember. Her dog got caught in a trap. I helped her get it out.
You talked together?
Yes. She said her mother suffered a lot. She was very fond of her mother.
And did you talk about yours?
Yes, I did. I don't think she was very happy, Miss Henderson.
Not a very pretty girl, I understand.
I thought she was rather good-looking. I liked her.
Not so much to be proud of if all's known. Did he say who Mrs. McGinty was referring to?
Bentley thought it might have been Mrs. Upward, but he was very uncertain about it. He was very uncertain about everything.
But it couldn't have been Mrs. Upward, because Mrs. Upward's dead. Dead for the same reason as Mrs. McGinty, because she recognised a photograph.
I tried to warn her.
A photo of Lily Gamble. And there are only two possibilities, Mrs. Rendell and Mrs. Carpenter. I don't count the Henderson girl. She's got a background.
And the others have not?
You know how things are nowadays. The war stirred up everyone at everything, and it transformed little villages like Broadhinney. The only people we really know anything about are the Summerhayes family, who've been there for three centuries. All the rest have no real background. Mrs. Rendell comes from somewhere outside Dublin. Eve Selkirk, before she met Carpenter, was a pretty war widow. And anyone can be a war widow.
Tell me, why do people keep photographs?
Goodness knows. Why do people keep all sorts of things? Because they remind them of things, I suppose.
Exactly. A woman might keep a photograph of herself because it reminds her of what a pretty girl she once was.
And people keep photos out of sentiment. A picture of your married daughter when she was a child, naked on the hearthrug.
But who would have wanted to keep that picture of Lily Gamble, with her ugly teeth and thick spectacles?
Well, somebody must have done, because Mrs. Upward had seen it.
Had she?
Dash it all. It was you who told me. She said so herself.
Yes, 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 she said so. But the late Mrs. Upward was in some ways a very secretive woman. She looked at all the photographs, and it was evident she recognized one of them. But for her own reasons, she decided to keep that to herself. And being very quick-witted, she deliberately pointed to the wrong picture.
Are you really serious?
I have never been more so. Her curiosity was aroused, and she wanted to have a private talk with the person she associated with that photograph. And when her son and Mrs. Oliver went off to the theatre, she seized that opportunity.
And she sent for Deirdre Henderson. That puts her right back in the picture. You do like to make things difficult for yourself, don't you, Monsieur Poirot?
I had arranged to meet Maud Williams at the Three Ducks to report on her first day with the Weatherbys. We found a quiet corner to ourselves, although it was most unlikely that the Weatherbys would ever have ventured in there.
All I can say is that I hope I don't have to stay there for too long. The Weatherbys really are a very nasty couple, and I feel terribly sorry for poor Deirdre.
When did you arrive there?
Oh, I haven't wasted any time. I got there last night.
Last night?
Yes. Mrs. Weatherby had gone to bed, and Mr. Frostyface had locked himself away in his study. He seems to spend all his time there.
And Miss Henderson?
She went out.
Did she say where she was going?
To keep Mrs. Upward company, she said, but she couldn't find anyone about. I gather Mrs. Upward's been murdered.
Yes, mademoiselle. She has been murdered.
Mrs. Weatherby got very hysterical about it. It must have been a nasty tramp, she said, and gave me a long lecture on keeping all the doors and windows locked. All Mr. Weatherby wanted to know was who got the money. But I'll tell you one thing.
What is that?
Mrs. Weatherby isn't as fragile as she makes out. She was down at the post office first thing this morning. She can get about when she wants to. And when she came back, she accused me of going through her things.
And had you been doing so?
Of course. That's what you wanted me to do, isn't it? And she told me I was wearing too much makeup. If she's going to go on like this all the time, I shall be strongly tempted to lace her eggnog with arsenic.
Superintendent Spence's here, Monsieur Poirot. He says he'd like a quick word with you.
Oh, then if you would be so kind as to show him in, Mrs. Summerhayes.
Of course. Would you care to go in, Superintendent?
Thank you. I thought I'd better come round right away.
What has happened?
We've got new evidence. The girl who works in the post office, Edna, Mrs. Sweetman, brought her in and made her tell us what she'd seen.
And what did she see?
On the night of Mrs. Upwood's murder, she was waiting around for a boyfriend outside Laburnum's, and she saw a woman go in there.
What time was this?
Sometime after 8:30 and before 9:00. But it wasn't Deirdre Henderson. It was a woman in her 30s with fair hair. So we can forget your idea about Mrs. Upwood deliberately leading us up the garden path by pointing to the wrong photo. We're right back where we were. Both Eve Carpenter and Sheila Rendell have fair hair. It's definitely between the two of them. The only question is, which one of them was it?
I needed quiet and solitude in which to exercise my little grey cells, but these were not to be found at Long Meadows. To the banging doors and squawking hens had been added the incessant hammering of an old typewriter. Robin Upward had taken over one of the first floor rooms as his office.
I just can't concentrate at home. I've already torn up 3 drafts of the script, but I must keep at it. I know the Madre would have wanted me to go on with my work.
I can't find the Minivac form anywhere.
You have left a calendar of spinach on the sofa.
The form only came last week and I must have put it down somewhere. Perhaps it was when I was darning that pullover of Johnny's. Or have I put it away in the bureau? Ah! Here it is! Thank goodness for that! Sorry to have disturbed you.
I have a horror of untidiness. It offends my mind. I could not bear to sit with the confusion she had left, and so I began to put back the letters and the socks and the magazines and the photographs into the bureau. Long Meadows?
We're back where we started. It looks as though you might have been right about Mrs. Upward deliberately pointing to the photograph of Lily Gamble to put you off the scent when, in fact, it was another picture she had recognised.
Why? What has happened?
I told one of my sergeants to go through everything at Laburnum's with a fine tooth comb. I thought there might be a secret drawer in Mrs. Upward's desk.
And was there?
No, there wasn't. But then he started to go through the shelves and he came across a book published about 10 years ago. And on the flyleaf, written in pencil, was the name Evelyn Hope.
The name Eva Kane took when she left England.
Exactly. So what was Mrs. Upward doing with it? Does that mean she was Eva Kane? But if that's the case, why was she murdered? I leave you to chew over that little problem. Perhaps we could meet later in the day.
If Mrs. Upward had killed Mrs. McGinty, did that mean there was another murderer at work in Bratini? It simply did not make sense. Hello? Long Meadows?
Monsieur Poirot, this is Maud Williams. Can you meet me at the post office in 1/4 hour?
Maud Williams was looking at the knitting patterns. I bought a book of stamps, and we left together. I fear that Mrs. Sweetman can only have thought the worst about evil old men from the continent.
I don't know whether it's got anything to do with anything, but there was somebody trying to get in at the window of the Weatherbys' bedroom this morning.
When was this?
About 11:00. Her ladyship had gone out and Deirdre was exercising the dog. Old Frozenface was locked up in his study as usual. It seemed a good opportunity for me to have a bit of a snoop round.
Most commendable. Go on.
So I nipped upstairs into their bedroom. There was a ladder up against the window and somebody was fumbling with the catch. Mrs. Weatherby's had everything locked and barred ever since Mrs. Upwood's murder. When the man saw me, he scuttled down and made off.
Can you describe him?
Oh, I only got the briefest glimpse. By the time I got to the window, he was down the ladder and gone.
You're sure it was a man?
All I noticed was an old felt hat. It could have been a woman, I suppose.
Evelyn Hope.
What did you say?
No, I was speaking to myself.
You said Evelyn Hope. That's the name Eva Kane took when she went abroad. It was in the Sunday Comet.
No, mademoiselle, it was not in the Sunday Comet. The police have found the name written in a book at Mrs. Upwood's house.
Then Michael was right. She didn't die out there after all.
Michael?
I can't stop. I've left the lunch on the stove. It'll be getting dried up.
Oh, thank goodness you're back. Mrs. Carpenter's come to see you. She's been waiting in the drawing room for ages.
Look here. You're a private detective. I want to hire you.
Mon Dieu, madame, I am not a taxi cab.
The police seem to think I killed Mrs. Upwood. And I wasn't even there. I was just sitting at home listening to the radio. I didn't even take the call. It was the butler.
And what was this call?
Mrs. Upwood wanted me to go round the night she was killed.
And did you go?
Why should I waste my time talking to that dreary old woman? Why should I go and hold her hand?
Can you prove you were not there?
That's just it. I can't. Guy was out at some ghastly political meeting. Oh, you've got to help me.
I regret that in this affair I act for James Bentley. But if you are innocent, you have nothing to fear.
Sorry, lunch is late, but I can't find the scissors. I've got three pairs and they've all vanished. Did I leave them in the bureau by any chance?
And once again, all the drawers were pulled open and their contents emptied onto the floor.
There they are. Lunch won't be long now, Monsieur Poirot.
And so, once again, I set to work to put everything back into the bureau. But then I came across something that had not been there before. It was a photograph. I knew I had reached the turning point of the case. I hurried up to my room with it before Mrs. Summerhayes found that she had lost something else.
251, Mrs. Rendell speaking.
It is Hercule Poirot, madame, and I wish to ask you a question.
Yes, what is it?
Did Mrs. Upwood telephone you on the night of her death?
Yes, she did. How on earth do you know that?
At what time?
About 6 o'clock, I think. The housekeeper took the call. Apparently Robin and Mrs. Oliver were going to the theatre, and she wanted to know if I would go round and keep her company.
And did you go?
I meant to. I really did. But I fell asleep after dinner and I didn't wake up till 10 o'clock.
Did you tell the police about the call?
No, I didn't. Should I have done? You see, I couldn't help feeling that if I had gone round, she might still be alive. I felt quite ghastly about it.
Our latest information from Australia is that the Evelyn Hope in question died out there 20 years ago.
But she may have arranged a convenient death for herself and returned to England under another name.
You mean she came back and married a wealthy car manufacturer called Upwood?
And she kept an old photograph of herself, which Mrs. McGinty happened to come across.
But we keep coming back to the same problem. If Mrs. Upwood was Evelyn Hope...
Evelyn Hope. That is the key to the problem. When Eva Kane left this country at the time of Craig's execution, she was expecting a child. Now, did she call that child Evelyn Hope, I wonder?
It's perfectly possible, I suppose, but...
Evelyn Hope. Oh, mon Dieu, of course. Oh, how criminally stupid I have been. The whole thing is so simple.
It may seem simple to you, Poirot, but to us lesser mortals...
I must speak to Mrs. Oliver.
She's gone to London for the night and won't be back till tomorrow.
Then I must pay a visit to the theatre at Cullen Quay.
Well, what's that got to do with anything?
I must speak to an actor called Michael. I only hope it is the same one.
And then?
If I find what I hope I shall find, then I would like to organise a little reunion at Long Meadows to bring together everyone associated with the mystery. I believe that we are very near the solution, my friend. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Down on one knee, just like I. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Holding her hand out, just like I. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Like this. Do you remember that game? Some of you may have played it as children. Mrs. Upward repeated it to me.
but with a difference. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Sticking her neck out, just like I. That is what she said, and that is what she did. She stuck her neck out, and she, like Mrs. McGinty, died.
So, can we take it, Monsieur Poirot, that James Bentley is not the murderer?
It was to supply the answer to that question, Major Summerhayes, that Superintendent Spence asked me to investigate the case, to find out how Mrs. McGinty died and why.
And did you find the answer?
You must be patient, Mr. Carpenter. In the Sunday Comet, which Mrs. McGinty read on the weekend before her death, 4 photographs of women linked to celebrated murder cases were published, and Mrs. McGinty recognized one of them. She had seen it in one of the houses where she worked. Now, as you probably all know, I produced these 4 photographs at Mrs. Upwood's house. I caught a flicker of surprise and recognition on her face.
And she admitted she had seen one of them before.
And when I asked her which photograph, she pointed to the one of the child murderess, Lily Gamble. But that, let me tell you, was not the truth. Mrs. Upwood wished to keep what she had seen to herself. She pointed to the wrong photograph. But one person was not deceived, the murderer. That person knew which photograph Mrs. Upwood had recognized.
So whose photograph was it?
It was that of Eva Kane, the woman who was the accomplice, perhaps even the guiding hand, in the famous Craig murder case. On the next evening, Mrs. Upwood was killed. But 3 women had received calls from her, asking them to come and see her. Mrs. Carpenter, Mrs. Randall, and Miss Henderson. Now, why these 3? Had they anything in common? Nothing, except their age. The article in the Sunday Comet mentioned, in terms of sugary sentiment, the daughter of Eva Kane, and the 3 women invited by Mrs. Upward were all of the right age to be that daughter.
But this is preposterous.
Now, patience, I beg you, Mr. Carpenter. Let us consider the 3 women Mrs. Upwood invited to her house that evening.
But I didn't go. I had other things to do.
I meant to go, but I fell asleep in my chair.
But Miss Henderson did go. She found the house in darkness and could not make anyone hear. That is the story that these 3 women tell. But there is evidence to contradict it. On the table, where Mrs. Upwood took coffee with her visitor, there were 2 cups. One of them Mrs. Upwood's, and another with distinct traces of lipstick. And an outside witness has stated positively that she saw a fair-haired woman go into the house that night.
Oh, my goodness.
And there is evidence of scent, an expensive and exotic scent, which Mrs. Oliver noticed when she went into the house that night and discovered the body of Mrs. Upwood.
It was quite unmistakable.
And does anyone in Broadhinney use that scent?
I believe Mrs. Carpenter does.
It's a lie. I never went anywhere near the place. Guy, can't you stop this?
Let me remind you, Mr. Poirot, there is a law of slander in this country.
Is it slander to say that your wife uses a certain scent? And also, let me tell you, a certain lipstick?
Oh, but this is ridiculous. Anybody could go sloshing my scent about.
May we? Exactly. Anyone could. But it set me thinking. Scent and a trace of lipstick. Was it a deliberate attempt to make it look like a woman's murder? And then I reflected on the telephone calls to these 3 women.
I never spoke to Mrs. Upwood herself. The butler took the call.
And I had a message from the housekeeper.
And Miss Henderson only heard about the call from the German maid.
You mean it may not have been Mrs. Upwood who actually telephoned?
Precisely. The object of the calls was to involve a woman, any woman, in the crime.
But why?
There could be only one answer. Because it was not a woman who killed Mrs. Upwood, but a man.
Of course. Why couldn't I see that?
So, I arrived at this point. A man killed both Mrs. McGinty and Mrs. Upwood. And there could be only one reason for the murders. The photograph that both of them had seen.
But why was it kept?
For sentimental reasons, perhaps. After Mrs. McGinty had been disposed of, it was no longer dangerous. But after Mrs. Upward's death, it was a damning piece of evidence. And yet it was not destroyed. I have it here.
Look, Chris.
Where did you find it?
I found it in this house. It was in a drawer of that bureau.
Who is it?
It is Eva Kane. And shall I tell you what is written on the back of it? My mother.
But I don't understand.
No feeling of guilt, Mrs. Summerhayes. You knew of no reason why you should not keep the photograph. You told us yourself you were an adopted child. I doubt whether you ever knew the name of the woman in the photograph, but somebody else knew. Somebody who can trace his family back 300 years. Someone who would do anything to prevent the world knowing that his wife was the daughter of the murderer Craig and of Eva Kane.
You're talking nonsense. Saying foul things about my wife. You filthy little...
Steady on, Major Summerhayes. Let him finish.
It's utterly ridiculous. Anyone can stick a photo in a drawer.
I've never laid eyes on that picture in my life.
No, Mrs. Summerhayes. Because it was put into that drawer only a short time before I found it. And I know by whom. In Mrs. Upwood's house, there was found a book with a name written on the flyleaf. Evelyn Hope. The name Eva Kane took when she left England and which she gave to her child when it was born. The Sunday Comet assumed that the child was a girl, but Evelyn is also a man's name, and Eva Kane's child is a man. Evelyn Hope came to England. He was brilliantly talented and attracted the attention of a rich woman who knew nothing about his origins. He spun her a romantic tale about his mother, a tragic young ballerina dying of consumption in Paris. The woman adopted him, and he took her name by deed poll. But your real name is Evelyn Hope, is it not? Mr. Upward?
Of course it isn't. I haven't the faintest idea what you're going on about.
Have you not? There are people who know you as Evelyn Hope. The name written in the book is in your handwriting, as are the words, my mother, on the photograph. Mrs. McGinty saw that photograph and what was written on it and spoke to you about it after reading the Sunday Comet. She assumed it was a picture of Mrs. Upwood when young, since she had no idea that Mrs. Upwood was not your real mother. But you knew that if it should ever reach Mrs. Upward, that you were the son, not of a ballerina, but a murderess, your world would come tumbling about your ears. So, the next evening, you call on Mrs. McGinty on the way to your broadcasting coalport. You brought out this sugar hammer, and you killed her like this!
No, I didn't! It was an accident. I didn't mean to kill her.
And Mrs. Upward, your beloved madre, did you not mean to kill her either?
I wanted to spare her the knowledge of who I really was. I thought it was better for her to die rather than know the truth.
But she already knew the truth, Mr. Upward. You didn't want her to cut you out of her fortune.
No, it wasn't like that at all. It was a terrible mistake.
A mistake, was it, Sir Upward?
Anyway, if I did do it, it's not my fault. I couldn't help it. It's in my blood. My mother was a murderess. You can't hang me for something that isn't my fault.
You see if we can't. Mr. Upward, I must warn you that anything you say...
You can't. I never meant to kill them. I couldn't help it.
At least I shall be spared the horror of that terrible travesty of my poor book being put on stage. But why on earth did the silly creature try to hide that photograph in the Summerhayes Bureau? Surely that was a very stupid thing to do.
He had hoped to use it to incriminate Deirdre Henderson. After all, she had been at Mrs. Upwood's house on the night of the murder. He tried to climb into the Weatherby's house, hoping to plant it in her room.
But your friend, Miss whatever her name is, caught sight of him.
He panicked and ran back to Long Meadows, but he knew that I might return at any minute. He hid the picture in the first place he could think of. It was sheer bad luck for him that I came across it and that I knew it had not been there an hour earlier.
It was obvious to me only one person could have put it there, and that person was hammering away on his typewriter just above my head.
And so you dashed off to Collenkey to have a word with that actor, Michael. I never caught what his name was.
Maud Williams had also mentioned the name Michael. He had known Robin Upward when he first came to England, and I was sure that he would be able to confirm that Upward's real name was Evelyn Hope.
Mm. Of course, when you come to think of it, there was something very unnatural about his attitude to Mrs. Upward.
Exactly. The attitude not of a son to his mother, but of a protégé to his patron.
And calling her Madre all the time. What I find really hard to come to terms with is that Robin murdered Mrs. Upward while I was sitting out of the car waiting for him. I wouldn't have thought he could have done it in the time, particularly putting Eve Carpenter's lipstick on the cup and spraying the room with her scent.
Oh, madame, of course there was time, and he had prepared everything beforehand. I mean, think how swiftly a stage can be reset between scenes.
Mm. Good theatre, I suppose.
Oh, he was a master of illusion. After all, he killed Mrs. McGinty on his way to a broadcasting coal pod, and no one suspected him because they had heard his voice on the radio that night. But he had ample time in which to do both.
Mm. Even so, there I was sitting in his car while he was strangling Mrs. Upward, and I hadn't the least idea.
I am afraid, chère madame, that your woman's intuition was taking a day off.
But I was right about Dr. Rendell.
Right? In what way, madame?
About his being a murderer. You ask your friend Superintendent Spence when you see him again.
We are to have dinner together as soon as I return to London. But there is a little unfinished business I must attend to first.
I couldn't wait to get away from the Weatherbys. I can't tell you how much satisfaction it gave me to tell that stuck-up old woman I wouldn't be coming back and that she'd have to mix her own eggnog.
So, will you be returning to Breather and Scuttle?
Oh, not on your life. They're a hopeless outfit.
And they have served their purpose.
What do you mean by that?
I have been very discreet, mademoiselle, but I believe that the fair-haired woman who was seen going into Mrs. Upward's house on the night of the murder was you.
What makes you think that?
Why did you come to this part of the world in the first place? Why, when you went to Broadhinney, did you ask Robin Upward for his autograph? You are not the autograph hunter type. When I casually dropped the name of Evelyn Hope into our conversation, how did you know it was the name assumed by Eva Kane?
I've nothing to hide, Monsieur Poirot. Eva Kane killed my mother.
Mm-hmm. I thought that might be the case. Then your real name is Craig.
I was brought up by my mother's cousin. I always suspected my father had taken the rap for a murder that was actually committed by Eva Kane. When I was grown up, I got a detective agency onto it. They told me Eva Kane had died out in Australia, but had left a son who called himself Evelyn Hope.
So how did you trace him to Broadhinney?
I got pally with an actor called Michael West, who was a great admirer of his. He told me that Hope was writing plays under the name of Robin Upward, and he pointed him out to me one evening in the theatre. He was with his mother, and I jumped to the conclusion that she was Eva Kane, and that she wasn't dead after all.
And that was why you were so keen to help me?
Well, I was convinced that Mrs. Upward had killed Mrs. McGinty, and when I heard from Deirdre Henderson that Robin and Mrs. Oliver were going out for the evening, I thought I would pay a call on the woman I believed to be Eva Kane. I took a little pistol I had in the war with me. I don't know quite what I had in mind. To frighten her, perhaps.
Oh, go on, mademoiselle.
The door wasn't locked, so I walked in. She was sitting there, dead, her face all purple and swollen. All the ideas I'd had in my head seemed silly and melodramatic. I knew that I couldn't possibly have killed her when it came to it. So I left. That's all. So what are you going to do about it, Monsieur Poirot?
Nothing at all. Now you can put it all behind you. I wish you good fortune in life, mademoiselle.
Not bad grub they do here. Not bad at all.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I had been dining here on the night you first came to talk to me about James Bentley.
And now we've really got something to celebrate. Not a bad spot of brandy either.
You know, Poirot, I don't think I've ever known a case where so many people had something to hide.
Ah, you are thinking of Mrs. Carpenter, perhaps.
Well, if ever a woman really acted guilty, she did. And what for?
Eh bien, what for? Tell me.
Just the usual business of a rather unsavory past she didn't want to come to light. She'd been a taxi dancer.
Comment?
A lively girl with plenty of men friends. And she wasn't a war widow when she turned up in Broadhinney. Only what you might describe as an unofficial wife.
And that would never have done for the wife of a prospective member of Parliament.
It certainly wouldn't. As she was frantic, the whole thing would come to light.
And what about the Rendells? Mrs. Oliver tells me you have proof that he is a murderer.
I wouldn't put it quite like that. It seems that when his first wife died, he had a practice in Leeds. The police got some very nasty anonymous letters saying he'd poisoned her. There really wasn't very much to go on, except that her life had been insured in his favour.
I suspect it was not only the police who received the anonymous letters.
Oh, how do you mean?
Mrs. Rendell seemed to have an obsession about them, and she was frightened that my investigation was a pretext for finding out about her husband. And he must have thought so too. I have a strong suspicion that it was Dr. Rendell who tried to push me under the train.
You'd have a job to prove it. But we'll keep an eye on him.
I think his wife would be wise not to insure her life in his favour. Another brandy, perhaps.
Can't think of any reason why not.
Jules?
At once, Monsieur Poirot.
So, what's to become of James Bentley? He's a poor stick.
At the moment, he seems positively aggrieved that he is not going to be hanged.
What's to become of him?
I trust that he will be saved by the love of a good woman.
You mean your friend Maud Williams?
Oh, no. No, I fear she has far too much vitality for him. I think that Deirdre Henderson would be a better choice.
You'd have a job prizing her away from that poisoned puss mother of hers.
I trust to the power of love. Success is always on the side of the big battalions.
On the side of the big moustaches, I suppose you mean.
Your cognac, monsieur.
Ah, thank you, Jules.
Well, I hope our splendid grub tonight has made up for all those terrible meals you had to suffer at Long Meadows.
Ah, now I think I may have effected a little conversion there, my friend.
How do you mean?
Before I left, I gave Mrs. Summerhayes a lesson on how to prepare an omelette, and she proved a surprisingly apt pupil. And I have sent her a very elementary cookery book. I have high hopes.
Then, here's to bon cuisine. Is that how you put it, Monsieur Poirot?
Quite right, Superintendent. À la bonne cuisine. And may Mrs. Summerhayes come to understand its supreme pleasures.
In Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Ariadne Oliver, Julia McKenzie, Superintendent Spence, George Baker. Robin Upwood, Nick Waring, Mrs. Upwood, Jill Balkan. Maud Williams, Beth Chalmers. Maureen Summerhayes, Molly Gaisford. Major Summerhayes, Ian Masters. Eve Carpenter, Angela Sims. Guy Carpenter, Dominic Colchester. Mrs. Rendell, Susanna Corbett. Dr. Rendell, Gerard McDermott. Deirdre Henderson, Teresa Gallagher. Mrs. Weatherby, Rosalind Knight. Mrs. Sweetman, Jilly Mears. Mrs. Birch, Connie Walker. Mr. Scuttle, Geoffrey Beavers. Michael, Kim Wall. James Bentley, Tom George. The Summerhayes Baby, Cassius Swales. Mrs. McGinty's Dead was dramatized by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.